R&B, sports, blues, and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves. A true community. Celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love. Where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Welcome home.
To Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. That's KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Sorry about that, FCC. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Andrew Ferguson, who's speaking right now because Mike is putting his headphones together. We've got a very special guest coming up this show. We've got a representative from the Harris County County Clerk's Office and
Roxanne Werner.
Excellent.
Oh,
no. Okay.
Hold on. I'm getting there.
Okay.
I think I got something now. Thank you.
Excellent.
Okay. Yeah, Roxanne Werner is, let me get my notes out here because I hate to get titles wrong. You can tell I'm a little not quite entirely ready. Roxanne Werner, I think she's like community relations. Here we go. Director of Community Relations for the Harris County Clerk's Office. And the idea basically is to talk about the lines, the weights that you'll hear me because I'll just say I'm ready for her. Okay. I just got to get stuff out of my way. We were running a little behind and then my wires got literally tangled up. You know, when you talk about wires getting crossed,
yep.
My wires were in fact crossed, and that's what I was tangling with. Holy cow, look at the time. We got a clock problem.
We've somehow turned it onto a timer mode, I think.
I don't think I touched anything. Mode. Oh, that's okay. Great. So now it's 4:50. Okay, so Roxanne Werner is on the line with us. Roxanne, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Thank you so much. So I know you have limited time, so I want to try to keep this fairly succinct. So tell us a little about what happened on Tuesday, to what extent the Secretary of State's office directives may or may not have had an impact, and what your evaluation, Diane's evaluation of the situation was, what developed.
Sure. So this is actually a really good lesson in how every election is just a little bit different. The primary elections, which is what we just had last week, are actually kind of run by the local political parties. So you guys may have remember hearing some things about Iowa. After that, we got a question of how we were different. Our primaries were different in Iowa, and that is, you know, we don't caucus here. But our local elections are run to the political parties. So one thing that we did have was a different amount of polling locations. We still had 52 early voting locations, but the political parties come together to agree on certain things like the locations, and we work with both of them to make sure everybody is agreeable. Our office pitched the idea of a joint primary over the summer back in June. We thought that it would make for a more seamless voting experience. It would also mean that when you went to any location, On election day, you could walk in, check in on the iPad, and vote at any machine, which is the similar experience any of your listeners who voted early had.
Right.
That's
why I always tell people, vote early.
Yes.
Don't wait to election day.
Right. And this time, too, we had a significantly more number of people vote on election day, which is a reversal of a trend, which we've used to see in Harris County, which
right.
is one factor. But so we asked the parties to consider it. The Democratic Party came back and agreed. They thought a joint primary was a good idea. And the Republican Party declined. They said no. And since we there wasn't a joint consensus, we had to go with the option that we did go with. Now, one good thing was because of countywide polling, we did get them to agree to have both parties at every location. So in some primaries, people might remember certain locations you could only vote Democrat or only Republican. And that wasn't the case this time. You could go to any location and vote on either side. We did have, a very big turnout election, particularly on election day. We had more people vote on election day than we had the entire early voting period.
Wow.
And so you had heavily Democratic areas, some of which didn't have a polling location. Obviously, there was a lot of attention on Texas Southern University, and our office worked with them to get a polling location there last fall. And prior to that, there hadn't been an early voting or election day option on campus. So
right.
you tended to see some long lines because of the way that was set up. So I know the big question in everybody's mind, and we can come back to some of the other factors, but will November be like this? And the question is, or the answer is, we may see some lines in November, certainly. We have almost 2.5 million registered voters in Harris County, but you will have all 750 polling locations open in November, and you won't have to walk in and choose a side or an equipment. You'll walk in and cast a ballot as normal. So that's kind of the overview of what happened and what will be different.
Okay. Were there extra machines available, or were there machines that had been set aside as having some kinds of issues? Were there any options or issues in that regard?
We may have had some slight machine issues. We also know that we got a few calls from the poll workers who maybe thought there were issues, and then when we got the technician team out to troubleshoot, it turned out to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Although, as you know, we are looking towards getting new machines, but
right.
In this election are, working with what we have.
I have high confidence in election judges and poll workers, actually. I'm wondering if there were any issues regarding either poll watchers that may have been slowing things down intentionally or otherwise. And a second question that you might roll into that is whether there were any directives from the Secretary of State that Diane had to follow that may have advertently or inadvertently caused issues.
I didn't directly hear a lot about the poll watchers slowing anything down. Now, that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I agree with you. We have thousands of people who work our polling locations that make elections happen, and it's a tough job, and I definitely commend them.
It's a tough job.
And there are a lot of different factors that can slow people down in Harris County. You've got a very, very long ballot. Sometimes we would have people, because we're not used to having to break into lines, people might get in the Democratic line and vote a Republican ballot, and then once they got there, their ballot would have to be shut down, and the whole thing would have to be restarted. Like their ballot would have to be canceled. And so sometimes things like that too can have the perception of there being an issue with maybe the equipment or with what's going on. But the reality is just we had different the Democratic machines only had Democratic ballots and vice versa. So that was one difference. We didn't see what we saw in November with any specific last minute. Changes from the Secretary of State. Although, one thing that could potentially have alleviated the situation is if the state would move to having the local elections officials being able to decide to have a joint primary, because, it is kind of a perfect storm of having to negotiate with the parties
right.
instead of letting, this is the elections expert. This is what we do. We administer elections, and our hands are kind of tied in some of these aspects, despite what our recommendations might be.
Was there any difference in the number of provisional ballots that you got in the election versus other elections? Because one of the things that I've been advocating here on the show every week is if you have a problem getting your right to vote, request a provisional ballot, and if they don't give you on request, insist on a provisional ballot. So I'm just curious to see if that changed to any statistical degree in this election.
So I actually love that question, and I think you've got a really strong message there, too, because you're right. Everyone has that ability to vote. However, we actually have seen a significant decrease in provisional ballots, which is a good thing. It's a good thing because we know that, for example, countywide polling leads to people not having to be in the wrong polling location. So we see a decrease from that angle. And also, again, we mentioned the hardworking election judges that we have, and we enhanced the judge training last year. And so as we see judges and poll workers, you know, potentially have better training or just get more experience, if you've worked a first one election, it might be harder versus if you've worked several, they'll be able to give people other options potentially besides the provisional ballot. So we actually saw a fairly big decrease in provisional ballots, which we're really happy about, and I take that as a sign. Right, that we're doing a good job, but you're 100% right. It's always within anyone's right to ask for one if they feel like they're being turned away.
And I use the word insist when necessary. Do you think that there was any confusion, complication, delay, issues caused, I'm going to put slash marks on all of those, caused by, I know we don't register party in Texas, but cross-party voting, because, you know, Trump had said, hey, vote for Bernie Sanders if you're a Republican. I mean, I don't know that there's any way you can track any of that, but is there any hint that you saw Republicans deliberately voting in the Democratic Party, and did that cause any issues?
You know, I can't. You're right. We can't track it. I feel like I've seen people on both sides of the aisle think that, given depending on the election, that might be a good idea. I think the more reasonable thing to think about is, again, we have a really long ballot, so you're talking not just presidential, you're talking commissioner court, you're talking judges, you're talking House districts. And then, of course, each party added amendments at the end, which typically when you vote on a proposition or an amendment, it's to make it a law. And these really were just more to almost opinion surveys, right, to help guide each of the parties and what their people believe. So you really had a very long, kind of complicated ballot.
Yes.
And then you do obviously have the very big spotlight on the presidential election. But then locally, you do have on the Democratic primary ballot, you have the state, you know, state senator election. You've got Commissioner Precinct 3, which was pretty competitive, some of the House districts. So you have some more competitive races. And on both sides, too, Precinct 3 is open on both sides of the aisle. So Republicans in that district are probably a little bit more motivated to vote in their own party because they have some skin in the game, even if it's not the presidential
election.
That's
true. They have down-ballot people, too. There were two more questions I had, and then I'm going to turn it over to Andrew, if that's okay.
Okay.
The first question is, I'll get to the first question. The second question that I had, I noticed that there's something about Harris County possibly adding voting machines. Now, I know that you're not buying new machines until next year, so I'm wondering, you know, buying obsolete machines.
So
are we talking
buying,
borrowing, renting?
Yeah. So they're not new machines. The terminology we would use is additional equipment. So, you know, ever the bargain hunters.
Yes.
We've got an election to run in the meantime. We know we won't get them, but some of the other counties that are getting new machines, we're negotiating with them to get them to sell us their machines at a very low cost. We did some of that at the end of last year.
90% off.
Yeah, exactly. Who can resist a good Black Friday deal?
Yeah.
And so
it's like garage sale.
Exactly. So we've got some additional equipment coming in. And again, our intent is not to use these machines long term, but we're really expecting November to be just completely record shattering turnout for Harris County. And so we want to be prepared. And so anywhere where we can pick up a little bit of extra equipment that's not being used, you know, we're looking into that.
Okay. Andrew?
Yeah. So I wanted to quickly ask about sort of the turnout on college campuses and that sort of thing, because I saw one image from somebody who was at Texas Southern University they had a line that was stretching like around the block. And mm-hmm. obviously, you know, long lines can be a deterrent to, you know, not just young people, but anyone who would want
it
to
can
vote.
Be deliberate or inadvertent.
It can be deliberate
or
exactly. So what I'm asking is, do you or the county clerk's office have any idea what could be causing long lines in general or long lines at college campuses, what the primary driver of that might be?
Yeah, so we've definitely done some thinking, of course, about that. I think part of it, like we said, is the unique setup of a primary. And it is, that's a really good point, too, because those locations are newer, it was harder for us to anticipate what the vote pattern there might be. And so what we were going off of was that in early voting and prior elections, like the college campuses had actually had a pretty low turnout. U of H had some people voting in tonight as well, but both U of H and TSU over the period of early voting, if you look at those numbers, they were fairly low. And so what you saw towards the end was a community, you know, using that as a voting resource, which is wonderful and which is what it's intended for. But based off the limited kind of information that we had, wasn't something we were able to predict. So now we know what kind of resources we will need to put on, you know, these college campuses for election day. And again, taking into consideration that in the future elections, they won't quite be like the primaries where you have, you know, two separate lines where you're not able to utilize all the machines there. Correct. So I think that will make a difference on college campuses as well.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Okay. I have now two more questions.
I did have one other thought, too, that I wanted to point out. Sorry. Is that
That's okay. I do that all the time.
We did also those locations were open for early voting as well. And typically in the past, there had been only an election day poll at U of H. So it is a shift in what people are used to, in what students are used to. And so I think hopefully before November, we can get the word out that those campuses have early voting on campus as well as election day, and hopefully encourage some of those students to go vote early if they're able.
Okay. Now I have two questions, and then Andrew will have one, and then I think we can let you go. And I want to say, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My co-host is Andrew Ferguson. I'm talking to Roxanne Werner, who is a director of community relations for Harris County Clerk's Office. And I only asked her to be on the show in a text last night and an email this morning. So
thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Okay, my two questions. Mail-in ballots and provisional ballots, how do we know they've been counted? Or have they been counted yet, for that matter?
So we actually do – this is also a very good question. For every election, we do an official canvass 10 days after the election, and that is when we consider everything final and counted. So both mail and provision, you might have some people that need to cure their provisional ballot, or
right.
you might have some people who requested a mail ballot application and then went and voted in person. So the numbers we consider to be right now unofficial and 10 days prior to after the election, then we do what we consider the official canvass, and then we call that final result. So any election, this one, any of our past elections, future, we've got that 10-day canvass period before we release the official final numbers.
Okay. And my last question, I know I attended a showing of two sets of new voting equipment that you are looking at for the 2021 elections. So, two-part question. Are you still taking comments on that, and or have any decisions been made on which system you're using?
Yeah, so we will still take comments. If you go to harrisvotes.com, we have a page for election equipment, and you can leave a comment on that page. The way it will work is we'll go into an internal proposal process with those two vendors, and once that and we are kind of in the middle of that internal process of moving it to internal at this point, and none of us, including myself, really will kind of have a deep insight into how the internal committee is moving, but we will definitely let everybody know when the decision has been made. Either way, if for nothing else, then we do have to go to commissioner's court and ask for the money to buy those new
right.
machines. But if people have, you know, ideas or thoughts on new machines, you can go to harrisvotes.com and fill out the form. And then we will give all of the feedback that we got at both the event that you mentioned earlier and via email We've gotten some emails from community groups and that kind of thing, and that will all go to every single person who makes, you know, is part of that committee that makes the decision.
Are there current links on the site for people to see the machines, or do you have to know the companies, or if not links, can you add the links to the vendors?
That is a good idea. I could certainly go and do that. I can tell you in Texas we have two approved vendors, and they are ES&S and Heart Inner Civic. So those are the two that we'll be looking at, but it's a good idea to take back. I can talk to the team about potentially adding the links for those two vendors on the website.
Great. And I hope when the decisions are being made or have been made that I'll get you or Diane back on the show so we can talk about the new machines and start to prep people for what to expect. And
I appreciate your enthusiasm about them, because we're going to need to get the word out, and you've been really, really engaged about the process. So we'd be happy to come back and talk about that.
I appreciate that. Now, Andrew has, I think, one more question, and then we can free you to go on about your day.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Just to get back to college voting for just a second. Now, there had been something that I heard, some confusion about whether in order to vote on a college campus, you needed to register specifically on the campus or specifically with the campus for some reason. Can you say if there was any truth to that and if confusion around it could have impacted turnout in any way, do you think?
So you do have to be registered in Harris County. You do not have to be registered at the college campus or at a location on campus. And that applies for any of our locations. I think there are a lot of different factors that do go into voter confusion. I don't know what kind of impact that has on young people turning out to vote, but I definitely understand that it can be confusing about, you know, where you're registered or how you're registered, or if you're an out-of-state student and maybe you live on campus.
Right.
But to know, you know, so that's a good reminder if you are a college student or anyone who needs to update their voter registration, go ahead, do it now. and then in Texas, too, you know, you do have to do that 30 days before an election. And so sometimes people in general, definitely not just limited to college students, you don't think about it until people are saying, oh, did you go vote? And then you go, oh, I didn't update my registration. And it's less of a problem if you've moved within a county, because there's a statement of residency form you can fill out at the polls. But if you've moved here from another state or something like that, you know, you would need to register.
Yeah, while you're in college, you're residing here.
Right. Now, on the flip side, too, let's say you're a student or you're a professor or you're a faculty member or you work on a college campus and you live in another part of town. Maybe you live in, you know, the Heights, and you go to school at U of H, and you're registered to your home address. That's perfectly fine. You can vote on campus. You can vote anywhere you want, just like everybody else. So once you're registered in Harris County, you're good. You can vote on a college campus. Not this time, but actually in November of 2019, I voted on campus at the University of Houston. It's a school I graduated from, and I was just really proud to have a voting location there. So I went back and voted there. So
cool.
As long as you're registered in Harris County, you can vote on college campuses or at any of our locations.
Well, I understand that there's a learning curve involved in everything. And I am confident, and I don't think this is a partisan thing to say, because we're not supposed to do partisan things, but I have high confidence that Diane Troutman is doing the absolute best job she has within the financial and legal constraints she has.
Yes, and I think the office's willingness to talk to the press and the media is an excellent indicator of, you know, how transparent and open about the process you want to be. So thank you again for calling in and letting us talk to you for almost 20 minutes now.
And keep in mind, just so you know, if you don't remember, I do about a 5-minute nag at the beginning of every show about voting and registering. So I try to do my bit.
Yes, and I appreciate you all talking to us and letting us, you know, it's a lot of work to be transparent and inform the public, but certainly shows like yours help us do that, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you taking the time to let me talk. So thank you both, and thank you for letting me be on the show today.
Well, I appreciate your coming on literally less than 12 hours notice. I've been speaking with Roxanne Werner, Director of Community Relations, Harris County Clerk's Office. Thank you again, and I'll look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Take care. Okay, I think that was great.
Yeah, it was great.
I think it was not only informative, I think it was a great public service. Roxanne is just about one of the most open public servants that I have had the privilege of talking to, and she's so accessible, and Diane too when she can. It's really been a pleasure dealing with them. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. My guest host,
Nope, not anymore.
I'm co-host. Trying to get used to this. And my co-host is Andrew Ferguson, one S in the last name.
Yes.
I've got that change. And KPFT.org is how you support this station. We are, at this point, 100% community supported. At the current moment, we don't have grants. We're working on them. So we rely on you, and about 8% of listeners at any given time are financially supporting the station. That isn't to guilt you out of listening. That's just to say, sometimes take a turn.
Sure.
We need you when you can.
Yeah. If you want more programming like this, if you want more people involved with your community right now to broadcast over the airwaves, then supporting KPFT is a great way to get more community-focused programming like ours.
Okay. And by the way, you can always go and review my shows. I post essentially all my notes, including the probably 60% I don't get to, at thinkwingradio.com. I have show blogs. Occasionally I'll post other articles from the Texas Tribune and other places. And also you can follow me at Think Wing Radio on Twitter. I don't know that there, that Andrew has any social media to follow yet.
Not any that is ready for prime time, okay, I don't think.
He'll work on it. He'll work on it.
And you can always catch up on old shows, or shall we say archived shows, at the archive.kpft.org.
And you can download our podcast.
Yes, you can.
You can actually go to the iPhone podcast and perhaps Android podcast.
Yes, Google
podcast. Search Think Wing Radio, and there is a podcast. It's that simple.
Yep.
It's amazing. Technology, man. I remember dinosaurs.
Now, Mike, I'm sure that's not true. You're
no,
not that old.
That's not true. But I do remember Studebakers.
Mm.
So that kind of gets us there. And my the first car I remember from my father was a 1948 Pontiac Chieftain. So that's kind of where we are. That car was 3 years old when I was born, just to say. Okay, so we've got MOD on the line. Just so you guys know, because I haven't given the number out yet, this is now an open forum.
Yes.
713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Okay. MOD? Are you there?
Hello?
There
yes,
you are.
Sir.
Hey. Okay, so we're down to about half an hour on the show, so let's try to bullet point this. How you doing today?
Pretty good. No more than 30 minutes, Mike?
No more than 30 minutes, MOD, and we can probably figure not 30 minutes.
So how about that pesky virus causing the market correction?
Oh, my Lord. You know, this is a great example, not of unintended consequences, but of unexpected consequences. That so many things that the average person doesn't immediately think has an impact. It's like, oh, okay, there's basically an extremely virulent flu bug going around. People get sick all the time. But because of the fear level, which to some extent is justified. You know, with the flu has like a 0.1% fatality rate, whereas this far is like at least 2%. So like 200 times more?
Well, as far as I know, it hasn't killed as many people as the flu does in a year. As far as I know, or that may just be U.S. numbers.
That isn't even a fair statistic because it hasn't been a year.
Fair enough.
So
the flu season is the beginning of November and the end of February.
Right. And actually, you know, I mean, you know, Trump, when he says stuff, it's like he says stuff.
Yeah.
But when he said, oh, it's going to go away in the spring because that's the end of flu, he may actually not be entirely wrong.
May.
But if you use the 1918 Spanish flu as a precedent, It did sort of go away for the summer, but then in 1919, it came back even worse, which is why you ended up with, I think, something like 15 million dead.
And as in...
And that's on a population in the world of about 1.5 or 2 billion, just, you know, statistically.
And as in any case when there is a sickness scare, the most important thing is not to panic. And to, you know, remember what is reasonable. You know, going out and buying all the hand sanitizer and face masks at your local, you know, Costco or whatever is not really is not really a proportional response to this. Most people, if you just wash your hands with soap frequently, you will be fine.
Don't shake hands with people if you can remember.
Sure.
Give a reasonable amount of personal space.
Yep. Yeah.
Cover sneezes and coughs. I mean, this isn't rocket science.
Because there are people out there who rely on hand sanitizer, baby wipes, face masks, these sorts of things in order to survive in their day-to-day lives. And so, you know, these shortages of those sorts of things are going to have an impact on them. So, you know, keep that in mind.
But to get back to what what you brought up, because we digressed, thank you for allowing us to, MOD.
It's my job.
Well, I guess what's good for the goose is good for the gander, you know. But
50 million people died from the Spanish flu.
How many?
50 million.
50 million. So not the 15 I just tossed out. 50 million.
Yeah.
Okay. But on a world population of 1.5 to 2 billion.
Yeah. To this code, though. Code. COLD.
Oh.
This is what caused the market correction?
No. What caused? I mean, it's complicated. But in the simplest terms, I grasp. You have a lot of fear about going out into public places, and public places is normally where you shop or work or congregate for fun. So what's happening is people aren't driving. People aren't going anywhere. So that impacts the use of fuel. You've got companies.
A couple weeks of, you're right, Chinatown here in Houston had like 50%.
Yeah,
ago.
At least.
And they're picking back up now. But
And now, wait a second. Now you're talking also about companies that are at least temporarily discontinuing work to kind of assess how communicable it is among their workforce. You've got other companies saying telecommute, if your job allows you to telecommute. Again, reduction in the use of mass transit, reduction in the use of buses, the use of cars, even the use of electric cars. And what's happening is you've got countries that need the revenue from oil. Russia needs it desperately. Believe it or not, even Saudi Arabia, as well as the usual suspects, is needing oil revenue because they have been going into their reserves over the last year or two.
But we should also spare a thought.
I think we're hovering around the same, maybe this bring the discussion, Mike, that, you know, the supply chain, what was originally suspected would be causing the, you know, the downturn. China picked up their manufacturing last week and the coal mines, so they're actually using prisoners to go into work in Apple manufacturing line. But
and that's why this is complicated. It's not just, you know, you can't just say it's one thing. You know, it's manufacturing, it's quarantine, it's demand collapse,
flu, and you have a regional economy, and then you have compounded supply chain.
Right,
but then
and so go ahead.
We also need to think about there are plenty of people who. Would like to be able to stay home from their jobs, but can't for fear of getting fired.
Yeah.
Minimum wage workers mainly.
And there are people that are being told not to go to work that don't have any sick days, don't have any paid leave. You're talking about one paycheck away from homeless in many cases.
And a reduction in their paycheck could leave them homeless.
Right, Andrew. But I guess what I want to get out there, guys, is that is this really what caused the market contraction of 20%?
Yes. I mean, in a very general sense and a very short answer, yes. But it's because of the compounding of all of these different things, the fear, the demand collapse,
right.
the quarantining. It's
the cherry on top of the sundae, basically.
Yeah, it's basically the knock-on effects of all of these things in a complex fashion.
Right, Mike. Can I ask it this way? You don't think it's because the markets have been insolvent since September, and we already put $6+ trillion into Wall Street on buybacks that this hasn't been experienced since 08. That, as Rahm Emanuel would say, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah, he said that.
You don't think it's sort of convenient that this little pesky virus has caused all that market downturn starting last September?
Well, I think it's partly due to the fact that the market was due for some kind of a correction anyway. So, you know, it's like when you listen to the market reports at the end of the day, it's like, well, the market went up because, and the market went down because. And what they're doing is surmising reasons after the fact.
Yeah. Well,
there are companies that either have been ripe for a correction, and there are companies that, I'm being told. You've got companies that were ripe for a correction anyway. You've got dividends in some cases that are too high. You've got, I mean, like I said, it's a complex situation that led to a simple result, which is a price collapse.
Well, that is to say that those 22 largest investment firms owned by the New York Fed and J.P. Morgan are the ones that got the hundreds of billions of dollars of stimulus in the last 2 weeks daily. And so that's not being mentioned. So those buybacks is the same type of insolvent reaction we had in 2008. And
well, buybacks support the market. Buying stuff, I mean, you can argue whether they should be allowed to buy back stocks with surplus because that didn't used to be legal. But when they are buying back their stocks, that's a price support mechanism. And
well,
it's worth noting that even with that.
They had like a $700 billion, you know, Hank Paulson saying, either give this money to us now or the world's going to end. They didn't do that. They don't like the word quantitative easing. They don't like the term printing press because if they're throwing trillions of dollars in since September. This brought up basically what was going on already, and they're conveniently saying because of the 2 weeks of, you know, global consumerism downturn has caused that. But I'll leave you with this. It's okay, Mike. You're right. Supposedly Russia gouged their costs. They're cutting their production on oil, and that I think that added to it. Also.
Actually, Russia isn't cutting their production. That's one of the reasons for the oil price collapse.
That's what I mean. That's the opposite, right? So that's affecting it too, then, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's very, very complicated, and what we have, I mean, it's kind of like the Great Depression. There's no one reason for the Great Depression. It was a bunch of things that all converged in a black swan event, essentially.
Yeah, you beat me to it. It's one teetering straw in the back that causes a global. But that market insolvent market, I think, was going on way before this happened.
Yeah, it was ripe for a correction, just nothing like this. I got to let you go,
right,
MOD. I've got a couple of other calls. Thank you so much.
Great discussion, though. Thank you.
Yes, very good. Thank you so much. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, with my co-host, Andrew Ferguson.
Yep.
You know, I'm old, man. I'm just going to fall back on that as an excuse. Okay, who we got up next? Someone is on the line.
Hello?
Yes. Who are you?
Scott.
Scott.
Hello,
how are
Scott.
You, Scott? We don't have names. We just have, there's a line there with somebody on it.
Okay, ready?
Yes.
Now, would you believe Sheila Jackson Lee got 77% against six opponents?
Yes, I believe it because that's how it went.
Yeah. That's quite a mandate.
Well, she's been an incumbent forever. She's
well
liked.
Yes,
she takes care of her. She takes care of her constituents.
I mean, I think Scott, what you might be getting at is you're wondering if there's a little bit of foul play there, perhaps.
No, I think it indicates that there's no mandate. There's not the people don't want her to do things differently.
Okay.
They don't want somebody different in that district.
Well, I think she's an effective representative for
the
district.
And it seems Congress always rates badly in the opinion polls, but people re-elect their own members of Congress.
Yes, that is one of the great ironies, that it's like when you poll about Congress, approval rates can be anywhere from like 9 to 20%, but they always re-elect their congressperson. So it's like, my congressperson is good. It's the other 434 that suck.
I was happy to see Al Green win with 84% against just one opponent because he worked He really worked on pushing impeachment.
Yeah. You know what more can we say on that? I think that subject for the moment is
impeachment.
Yeah, I think
the charges are still on paper.
Well, I mean, he is impeached.
Distributed, broadcast.
Well, he's impeached just like an indictment remains, you know, on the record, even if you are tried and found not guilty.
Yeah,
so he remains to have been indicted.
Republicans have been saying that there is no evidence. They kept saying that, and that is disinformation.
Well, the thing that chafes me is they not only didn't do any investigation worth speaking of for 2 years, but they obstructed investigation for two years.
Well, they certainly did.
And then after 2 years, it's like, but we're so close to the election. Why are we investigating it now? Well, it's because for the first 2 years, you guys didn't do your job. But nice try. But, you know, the party is just totally terrified and in thrall of Trump. He's and Mitch McConnell, I might add. I mean, Trump is vindictive, and he's media savvy, and I think that there's compromise that is being held back by Trump or McConnell or the Russians that is influencing at least a portion of the Republicans in Congress.
Well, Republican voters are accustomed to closing ranks.
Yes.
If they didn't close ranks.
They're a little authoritarian that way.
Yeah, well, they a certain type of Republican dominates Republican primaries. Like Stephen Hotze has quite a bit of swing in Harris County. He keeps the GOBT political caucus off limits to Republicans.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's good for Democrats.
Well, it is, except that Republicans get elected at times. There was a period when Republicans were winning Harris County countywide for pretty solidly.
Actually, I have an interesting article that I hope to get to, but it's looking grim, about the fact that in the Democratic primaries in Harris County, almost all the women won.
Yes, they won. And they ousted some judges that I liked.
Yes, not every woman was a great choice, as it happened, and there's some information. I got to let you go, Scott, because I have another caller. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM with my co-host, Andrew Ferguson. And you can follow what's going on at KPFT by going to kpft.org, where you can follow show programming. And did we just hang up on people?
Keep going.
Okay. Where I saw someone sort of holding.
Yeah, sorry. We had a little bit of a dead air on the on-air caller. Somebody who had hung up was still on the air. So
that obviously doesn't make any sense to keep on. So anyway. KPFT.org is how you keep up with what's going on at the station, on the station, the shows on the station. We've got HD1, HD2, FM. We've got fundraisers. We've got musical shows being announced, all kinds of stuff. Plus, you can donate money. Okay, so next caller is Johnny. Johnny? Okay, you're on the air, Johnny. How you doing?
Okay, so far. Listen, I have a travel airline related question for you.
Okay.
But first, I need you to explain something to me. I found it curious when you said earlier that lots of people, or most people, don't have a problem with their own congressman, but everybody else's congressman sucks, basically.
Well, it's kind of like, I'm a good driver, the problem is everybody else.
Well, see, here's the problem. How do you square that with people like me, whose congressman is a Republican, and everything that he emails me has to do with national defense and guarding guns?
Well, of course, we're talking...
I don't think he's great. How does that work for me?
We're talking on a meta level.
So,
you know, you may be in a
Washington D.C., right?
You may be in a gerrymandered district or not, but the fact is that as a district, the consensus seems to be, as the borders are drawn, that the guy you have is fine.
Yeah, we were talking about the people who do reelect their Congress people. We're not the people who oppose them, because obviously the people who oppose them,
no one gets 100% of the vote.
Yeah, regardless of the opinion of Congress as a whole, of the people who oppose their congressperson, you know, they're not going to reelect that person. So.
You know what I would wager, gentlemen? I would wager it's not the Democratic voters who are happy with their representatives. It's more the Republicans, because they think that the Republicans are just fine and dandy.
I think the Democrats, by and large, are happy with the Democrats that are in office. The problem is there aren't enough of them, and that's partly due to gerrymandering. And it's partly due to Democrats simply not, and it's partly, hold on, and it's partly due to Democrats simply not showing up.
Barack Obama and Bill Clinton have done a 180 when it came to governing.
Well, I would say they did more like a 90. I don't think they did a 180. No, I think that's overstated, overblown.
Okay, on to my question, because I know time is short.
Yes.
I have a travel-related question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am.
Given the environment and the environment, forget that word. Given the political climate right now, and that we have a bunch of Republicans who are the worst in governments we've ever had, and they're so unpredictable, I want to know what are the chances are that some of my family who decide to travel, let's say from here to the West Coast, what kind of trouble is TSA going to give them if they put on a mask before they board a plane? Are they going to be arrested as a terrorist, or are they going to be interviewed? What's the deal?
Well, I mean, I can't speak to that authoritatively.
I think at the very least they'll be asked to take off the mask.
For ID purposes.
For ID purposes,
and then
yeah.
They can put it back on.
Yeah.
Here's my suggestion. I think people should have the mask around their neck, ready to be deployed at a moment's notice, and they could say to the ticket agent, by the way, I'm wearing this mask because I have health concerns and I want to protect myself, and we don't have Medicare for All yet.
Well, you know, you don't need to go into your whole political dissertation. You just need to tell them, I have the mask on because I have health concerns.
And yeah. I think that would be a fair reason to want to keep it on through security, but you might still be asked to take it off regardless.
Briefly.
Yeah, briefly.
At least briefly. Now, I will also...
I just wanted to point that thought out there for the KPFT audience. That's
okay.
Have a good day.
Okay, thank you. You too. I mean, in addition to that, I think it needs to be constantly restated. Masks are better to prevent you from infecting others. They
yeah.
are much less effective in preventing others from infecting you.
Yeah.
So if you have a cold, if you have a cough, if you are traveling with the flu, which I have to tell you is already a very bad idea anytime, you know, so on the street, in the airport, on the plane, what you want to do is, out of courtesy, try not to infect others.
Sure.
Beyond that, frequent washing of hands. If you have it, hand sanitizer. Remember that armrests and food trays are touched by many people. The airlines are trying to have a stronger disinfection routine, but at the end of the day, you have to take responsibility for your own health. But all of these things, while they're not habitual, are really common sense preventatives.
And, you know, you don't just need to wear a mask in order to reduce your chances of infecting somebody else, you know, coughing or sneezing into an elbow, or, you know,
tissue,
or trying to hold it if you can.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know how
hard.
Good that is. But, you know,
there's an analogy to trying to hold back a sneeze,
yeah.
which I can't put on the air.
There are physical garment, you know, approaches, but there are also behavioral approaches. And
remember that masks that are being hoarded
yeah.
are essential for health workers who cannot get them.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
same thing. You know, my wife is in research, and they are also confronting this.
Yeah.
A lack of ready availability of hand sanitizers, the necessary masks that they need, sometimes the 95 masks, because research, you know, they have vapor hoods and all kinds of stuff. And then you've got the nurses and the doctors, and they have to have protection. They need gloves. So, you know, buy what you need.
Mm.
Do not hoard for the sake of hoarding, because
yeah.
for the most part, normal sanitary methods are enough.
Yeah, I think for the average person who doesn't end up getting infected by the disease. The biggest takeaway from this is that, you know, you need to, you know, buy what you need, don't hoard, but also think about your habits, think about, you know, your behaviors, and see if you can change them to make other people safer.
You know, it's kind of like going to a buffet.
Yeah.
Where it's eat all you want, but don't take what you don't need.
Yeah.
So consume as necessary. Don't consume. Don't buy for, like, the next 10 years.
Sure.
You know, whatever the course of this virus is, it will pass.
Mm.
It will pass either because mild versions that people get will provide some immunity. Unfortunately, some people will pass away.
Yes.
There will eventually be a vaccine.
Yes.
It will always be in the environment. You're not going to be able to exterminate it. But right now, we are a naive population in terms of our immunity.
Yeah.
But that too shall pass.
Yeah.
So it'll eventually be something that's just a really, really bad flu that you need to be alert to.
Ultimately, I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is remember the words of Douglas Adams, don't panic.
Yes, and carry a towel with you, which could be a handy thing for sneezing and coughing.
Yeah. That second part of that advice usually isn't relevant,
usually,
but now it is.
Now it actually is. Carry a washcloth or a towel and use that to sneeze. So Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide
to the Galaxy.
To the coronavirus.
To the coronavirus. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. If you want to make a call, we probably have time for one caller, or we can yak. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. So I've got a couple of things here. Dallas County has requested a recount on the Super Tuesday vote after discovering that it had missed some ballots. So Dallas County officials seeking a recount of primary results in a petition filed Friday in state district court discovered that ballots from 44 tabulating machines, now think about how many votes go on each machine, were not accounted for in the election results reported by the county on Super Tuesday. It's unclear how many ballots were missing. The issue turned up after county officials were unable to reconcile the number of voters who checked in to cast ballots at some polling places and the number of ballots received from those sites. The tally of ballots had been compiled from flash drives. So this is some of the newer machines, which I have seen sampled.
Was it city or county?
County. Dallas County.
Right.
The tally, so we're talking about 454 vote centers and 44 machines specifically. So there's a lot more to that article. You can go to thinkwingradio.com, today's show announcement, and there's a link because that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, we have a couple of callers. Let's get to them. John, who's first? See, I'm not getting names. All I'm getting is, oh, there's a line occupied.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, we do the best we can with what we have.
We do the best we can with what we have.
And we talk about
and
articles.
Ed, okay, you're on the air?
Not quite yet.
Now you're on the air. Ed, how you doing? Thanks for calling.
Oh, real good.
Yes.
Hey, I was at the grocery store yesterday, and I thought of something. Actually, I thought about this years ago.
Yes.
How many people are fondling fruits and vegetables that don't get cooked?
Well, I'm going to respond to that two ways. First, always wash your produce.
Yes.
That's number one.
Yep.
Number two, I have something that I came up with many years ago that I call constructive denial.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah. I mean, constructive denial, you know, denial gets a bad rap.
Mm.
It's like people always say, well, you're in denial. You need to recognize reality. You need to confront things head on. And that can be true.
Sure.
But, you know, there's also the serenity prayer aspect,
the
wisdom to accept the things you cannot change. So you can do one of two things. You can either drive yourself nuts thinking of all the things you can't change, or you can use what I'm calling constructive denial and just kind of consciously ignore it. You know, it's kind of like when you're driving in a car, and this is what I went through around 1980. I had like a year of this. It's like I'm driving in a car, and I'm always seeing accidents. I've seen a cement truck literally run over a sports car.
Jeez.
I've seen stuff, and it made me very, very neurotic for about a year until I came up with this concept of simply accepting that there are things I cannot impact, and worrying about them simply does not help me. So that's how I would address the produce question. Wash your produce and don't think too hard about it.
Well, I had an idea, is block the produce section off and make everybody wash their hands before they go in there.
Well, you know, stores are providing sanitizer. The problem is it's like voting. People don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Anyway, nice talking to you.
Okay,
y'all.
Thank you,
one.
Ed. Appreciate it.
And you know, Ed, you had an idea that, you know, we hadn't thought of, and you posed it to us, and that's what we want here. You know, we want people.
Well, I've thought of it.
Well, you've thought of it.
Because
okay.
I'm old.
All right.
I think
okay.
of a lot of stuff.
Okay.
I'm constantly cogitating. Okay, next up is
I'm
Nancy.
I'm old, too. So, anyway, y'all take care.
Thank you, Ed.
See you
take
later.
Care. All right, Nancy, you are up.
Yes, thank you. I would like to tell the membership that there is a very, very important vote for all Pacificans.
Yes.
And we have, it's about the bylaw amendments.
Yes.
And these bylaw amendments are very serious. In fact, I think this is the most important vote in the history of Pacifica.
Well, certainly and in the last decade or so.
Well, number one, it's going to drastically cut the elected representatives from 122 from all the five stations collected together
mm-hmm.
to only 11. And that means one director per station instead of 24 members.
So I'm gathering you're against this.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay. All right. And then already the writers of these bylaw amendments have already decided the at-large directors that have not presented their platform. We don't know where they're coming from, and they will outnumber, the six at large will outnumber the five elected directors from the get-go. Okay, we don't know where they're from.
Okay.
The other thing is no staff or programmer like yourself would be able to run as a director. So that means they have removed labor from the table.
Some of the people who might be most interested in having having some of those positions might no longer, is what you're saying.
I did read about the changes, and I know what they've done is eliminate separate representatives of listeners and separate representatives of staff. So now there's like one
director per station instead
right.
of 24.
Now, I will say this. I once took a management course. It was a prerequisite management course, and the guy was a real a-hole. But I do remember, among other things, something I think that is very important that he said, and he did a lot of management consulting, and he said he used a very, very simple formula.
Okay.
If he went into a company that was having problems with decentralized management, he centralized the management. If he went into a company that was having problems that had centralized management, he decentralized the management. I think Pacifica, as a network, right now falls perfectly into that story. I think that we, a number of years ago, a decade or so ago, we had an election that vastly more democratized, and I might use the term advisedly, Pacifica.
Okay.
It created a lot more boards, a lot more levels of bureaucracy. It created a lot of infighting. It created a lot of, let's say, fossilization or not the word I'm looking for, but basically a lot of deadlocking on decisions. And the end result was that Pacifica has gotten itself into some financial and political internal political issues.
So you're saying that it might not be a bad idea to get rid of some of these people.
It might be time to have a more centralized management for the network with obvious representation you want from the stations, but you might not want all of these different boards and all of these different layers.
And
unfortunately, I just ran out of time. I apologize.
Okay, well, the best thing is the $25 minimum donation
will be raised double.
Yeah,
$50. Yeah, I mean, you know, inflation. It's been $25 forever. It's kind of like riding on a street.
And
truck.
Anybody in the present bylaw, if you have no money and you have no ability to come to the station to do the minimum 3 hours to get a membership vote, you cannot appeal.
We are running over time,
removed.
But we can have this longer
March
conversation
12th,
next week.
Thursday is the last chance to reset
well,
your vote.
Then I would suggest that you you call into Egberto's show tomorrow then. Thank you very much. Sorry for running over time. Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston 90.1. Andrew Ferguson is my co-host. And we'll be back next week. And thank you and forgive me for running over.
See you later, people.